Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on oxymorons when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, in Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Now, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and now in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 or so years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Was it Moses and our founding fathers, or was it Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it, it's another of the many lessons that we teach here at the law school in our business school. We conduct that school here at the law school in Isabella twice a year. And if you'd like to learn more, you can call and order our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. It's area code 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc along with all of the paperwork for adult home study. So if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and then send us an email request for that free general law CD package. And if you're at home and you want to go to the next step and actually learn from that school, you can do it right there in the comfort of your own home. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about oxymorons. Now, remember that this oxymoron, so says Webster's Dictionary, comes from two words. It's called oxy, O-X-Y, meaning sharp, plus moros, M-O-R-O-S, meaning foolish. So it's sharp fool or smart fool. It's a combination for epigrammic effect of contradictory or incongruous words, such as cruel kindness, military intelligence, the sharpest marble in the drawer. In other words, it defies reason, logic, and common sense. It's insane. It's illogical. It's ridiculous. That's what makes it so funny. That's why when we hear these oxymorons, you know, they're usually one-liners, you know, which are jokes, you know, that we like to pass on to one another. But out here in the real world, there are some oxymorons. And I pointed out, drunk drivers kill. It's an oxymoron. Or, if you don't get a college degree, you're going to freeze to death in the dark. I showed you Bill Gates is doing quite nicely and he doesn't have a college degree, richest man in the world. And I showed you a list of people that had been homeschooled, that didn't go to college, or who were self-educated. Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Abraham Lincoln. These people made it all right in the real world. And I'm not down on college per se. I'm not sitting here saying you shouldn't go learn to be a doctor or a dentist or something like that, because you'll probably make more money as a doctor than you will as a truck driver. There's no controversy there. But I pointed out when we were talking about education over here that just because you go to college doesn't mean that you're going to learn a whole lot. You know, you could go to college, get a degree, be a hell of a good doctor, be just dumb as a box of rocks. I'm an educator. I see people come through my school over here, and I kind of shake my head, and I go, oh, my God, this guy is a medical doctor? Oh, my God, this guy is an engineer. I had a guy here one time. He was an engineer. He worked for some big aircraft company, and I said, I won't fly in any more commercial airplanes. If that's what an engineer knows, if that's how smart engineers are, I don't want to fly on that guy's airplane. Just my own personal opinion, you know, based upon what I see, what I hear, and what I know. So I thought, well, let's take a look at some of these oxymorons, like drunk drivers kill, Social Security is the third rail of politics. Let's take that one up. Have you ever heard that? Social Security is the third rail of politics. We Americans believe in Social Security, you know, like it's a religious experience. It's a religion here in this country. Anybody in politics knows if you mess around with Social Security, you're going to get voted out of office in the next election. And I don't think anybody has been so isolated that you haven't heard that Social Security is insolvent, that it's a Ponzi scheme, that it cannot continue the way it is. I mean, have you heard that? Or is this the first time in your life you ever heard those words? So it's either the people don't believe it, or else they don't care. I don't know which is which, and I'm not really here to get you to believe what I'm telling you. I just want to give you a report. I'm a reporter. You know, I'm not an evangelist. I'm not here to convince you that I'm right. I'm just here to give you the facts, and then you do with those facts as you see fit. I looked at Social Security some years back. In fact, it was 1968. I did the arithmetic on it. And actually, that's a lie. I didn't do the arithmetic. I wasn't smart enough to do the arithmetic. So I had a friend, a guy by the name of Al Manner, Big Al. God, he was a monster of a guy. He must have been 6'5", weighed 300 pounds. He was so big, he could hunt bear with a switch. Well, anyway, Big Al, good thing he was a nice guy, because if he ever got mad at you, you probably wouldn't survive the first encounter. Anyway, the Big Al was a computer guy back in the 1960s, and Al was the guy that did the computer programming for the city of San Jose's the water treatment plants and their sewage and their storm drains. You know, all that water falls on the city, and it's got to be drained off back into the bay. And well, he's the guy that did that. He's a pretty smart kid. And I knew he was pretty smart, and I knew he could count, you know, on both hands without taking his shoes off. So I said, Al, let's do the Social Security thing over here. Here's what I'm paying into Social Security. And if I pay this in for 40 or 45 years, how many dollars will I be paying into the system? And then let's call Social Security and ask how much I can get out of the system. And then let's figure out whether this is economical. So he did that. And I came to the conclusion back in 1968, this Social Security sucks. Boy, it sucks bad. But I didn't know how to get out of it. You know, I was working for wages at the time, and then I went to work as a contractor, and I didn't know how to do that, being dumb and all. You know, I don't know if you knew this, but I was institutionalized for 12 years. Yeah, that's a bitter pill to swallow, but I got to admit, I was put in an institution when I was 6 years old and kept there until I was 18. We called it public school back in those days, and I have been working for 50 years to overcome the trauma and the miseducation that I received during that 12 years of institutionalization. I'm doing well, though. I'm getting better, and I feel real good. And I've learned how to count, and when I did my numbers, I did the numbers on the Social Security, I finally learned how to withdraw from, to rescind my Social Security number back in 1968, and I did that. But from 1950, when I joined Social Security, until 1978, I paid about $12,000 and some change into the system. And I had to leave that $12,000 behind. Now, when I dropped out of Social Security, all my friends and relatives, they looked at me like I was stupid, suffering from the crazies. I'm sure that some of them thought this kid ought to be put into a mental hospital for psychiatric evaluation. But I went ahead and I did it anyway. And then I want to give you the numbers here so that as we go through these numbers, remember, I'm telling you that oxymorons are insane. And I picked Social Security because Social Security is insane, but we all accept it in this country like it was an article of faith, you know, like it was baptism, like it was the rapture, like, you know, like it's church, you know, like it's Billy Graham's evangelistic association or something. We believe in it. And we'll vote any guy out of office that goes to tamper with it or mess with it. You saw how far President Bush got with Social Security reform when he spent his political capital after the 2004 election. He started going around the country selling Social Security private accounts. We've got to solve the Social Security problem. It's a Ponzi scheme that's going to collapse. Now, you've heard all that. You didn't believe it, but you heard it. Okay, so back in 1950 is when I joined Social Security. And in 1951 to 53, if you were making $3,600 a year, which was the maximum amount that they would tax, you paid 2.25% or $81. Now, you didn't have to be real smart back in 1950 to figure out that if you were paying in $81 a year and you could draw out $500, that was a pretty good deal. But I don't remember anybody back in 1950 ever doing the arithmetic and saying, well, where's all that money coming from? I mean, you know, I'm going to pay in $80 and I'm going to get back $500 or $600. See, my grandmother, about the same time, 1951, my granddad died. She was drawing $50 a month out of Social Security. Now, my granddad started paying into the program back about 1940. And he paid in, you know, $80 a year. Let's just figure this out. If he started paying into it in 35 through 1950, paid in for 15 years, $80 a year, 80 times 15, it's $1,200. And my granny started drawing out at the rate of $50 a month, $600 a year. So in 1952, they got all the money they paid into it out. And then in 1953, until she died in 1967, that's 15 more years, and they kept giving her these little cost of living escalators, and I don't know how much she was getting in 67, so let's just stick with the $50. It's $600 a year. You know, let's go 600 per year times 15. And she got $9,000. Isn't that special? Listen, my grandparents paid in $1,200 and got $9,000 out. Now, I can readily understand why Social Security is so popular. What I can't understand is that all of you people have heard about Ponzi schemes and how that they are numerically insufficient to be carried on indefinitely. They ultimately grow like 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64 geometrically until they collapse. Well, Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system. It's a Ponzi scheme. You know, they didn't call it Ponzi scheme. They called it a pay-as-you-go system. Boys and girls, pay-as-you-go means Ponzi scheme. in case you didn't know. Now, evidently, Americans don't know that. Or if they know that, they're insane. I don't know which. I'm not here to tell you or accuse you. I'm just here to tell you that that's what an oxymoron is. An oxymoron is something that's illogical, and you know or should know that it's illogical, but you continue doing it anyway, expecting a different result from the same input. Now, if you go back to 1940, there were 80 people paying into Social Security for everybody drawing out. By 1945, there were 45 people paying in for every person drawing out. By 1957, there were 16 people paying in for every person drawing out. By 1969, there were 6 people paying in for every person drawing out. By the year 1996, there were 3.2 people paying in for every person drawing out. Today, it's 3-1. 2020 will be 2-1. 2030 will be 1-1. Okay, now, let's just apply a little logic to this. We have an economic model. And we start our economic model with 80 people paying in and one person drawing out. Then we carry that model forward for approximately 90 years, and we find that it will require to maintain the same payments going out as is prescribed here by our model designed back in 1935 to 40, that when we get out here 100 years, 90 years, 95 years, that it's going to have one person paying in for every person drawing out. What does that tell you, boys and girls? Now don't all raise your hands at the same time. Don't all speak together. Just mull it over a little bit. What does that tell you? All right, let me give you another little number here. In 1951, the maximum amount of money income that was taxed was $3,600. But in the year 2000, it was $76,200. So they have continually raised, that is for 50 years, continually raised the amount of income that's being taxed. Okay? Now, in addition to that, the maximum tax rate in 1951 was 2.25%, but in 2000, it was 15.3%. All right, now, the total amount of money being taxed has risen from 3,600 to 76,000. The percent that's being taken has risen from 2.25% to 15%. And the number of people paying in has declined from approximately 1950, let's see, that would have been about 40 people paying in, until today, in the year 2007, there is now 3 people paying in for everybody drawing out. Put those 3 factors together and then think about it real hard. All of you people out there with degrees after your name. Now, you people, you know, you housewives that didn't go to college, don't have a degree. All of you carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and truck drivers, and all of you common people wearing blue collars, don't waste your time. You probably can't figure this out. Now, all of you people out there with degrees after your names, can you boys and girls say Ponzi scheme? Can you all say that? Ponzi scheme. All right. Now, I want to address all you people that have degrees, because you people that haven't been to college and haven't been educated, your excuse is you are ignorant. I didn't know. I couldn't figure it out if I counted on both hands and took my shoes off. Now, all of you people with degrees after your names, now you're all educated. You people read, write, you can do arithmetic. I mean, some of you people out there, you know, are engineers and build airplanes, and you just scare the living hell out of me, because if you can't do this simple math on Social Security and you're out here building airplanes with computer models and slide rules, I ain't flying in your airplanes. Now, that's the conclusion that I came to. Boys and girls, this is unsustainable. That's the bottom line. It's unsustainable. The thing is going belly up. It's going to cease to exist. Now, I looked at that some years back. Let me give you the numbers on that. In 1968, I had an old buddy of mine. That guy's name was Al Minter. I don't know if he's still alive or not. I'm calling him Big Al. He was a monster. He was about 6'5". He weighed 300 pounds. He was so big, he could hunt bear with a switch. But he was a nice guy, and he was friendly and all, and he didn't get mean, because if that guy ever got mean, you'd never come out of there alive. Well, Big Al was a computer man back in the 1960s, when being a computer man was not common. And he worked for the city of San Jose at the time. This was down in the Bay Area. I used to live in Alameda, California. And Big Al lived in San Jose, or the environs thereof. And Big Al, and he had this big computer. I don't know what it was. He said it filled the whole room. This was back in the 60s. And he computerized. He put the entire city of San Jose's waste treatment in their storm sewers. He put those on computer, and it opened the valves and closed the valves and drained the water in the city. Well, he's the guy that did that for you people down there in San Jose. That was Big Al. Anyway, I was talking to him one day, and I said, I'm suspicious about Social Security. I said, well, help me do some numbers. Because, see, I was a high school dropout. I never went to college and didn't get any letters after my name. I have a hard time counting with my shoes off and both hands working. So I said, well, could you help me with this mathematical problem? He said, well, let me give it a shot. And so we sat down, and I said, well, here's how much I'm paying into Social Security, and here's how much the Social Security people say they're going to pay me per month and when I retire, and here's how old I am today, and here's how old I was when I started paying in. And he did all the arithmetic, and he said, okay, little Georgie, you're paying in about $1,000 a year, you know, round numbers, by 1968, see. we were paying in on maximum $7,800. We were paying in $500 a year. Wasn't $1,000, only $500. And so he worked that out, and he said, now, if you continue on with this thing, here's how many dollars you're going to pay in. You're going to pay in about $40,000 in all probability, and then you're going to get this much back. And here's what it's going to cost you. And I was going to pay in, and I was going to get back out about the same amount of money, 1968. Extrapolated forward, though, by 1978, just 10 years later, I extrapolated that out and discovered that I was going to pay in about $150,000 and I was going to get back about $100,000. So I decided that Social Security was not a good retirement program, nowhere near the kind of program that it was for my grandparents. You know, when 40, 50, 60 people are paying in and you're the guy's drawn out, you know, it's like a guy comes up to you and says, here, take this letter, fill it out, send a bottle of whiskey to this guy over here, and you'll get back 25 bottles of whiskey for your 5 bottles of whiskey that you send out with these five letters. Yeah, you ever done that? You know, called a pyramid scheme? I don't know if you've ever tried it, but I did. I was young and dumb, and then, you know, I institutionalized for 12 years. You know, you can't blame me. So I went out, and I bought 5 bottles of whiskey, and I sent it off to these 5 guys. And then I was expecting, you know, to get my 25 bottles of whiskey back, and I never got my whiskey back. Hell, I didn't even get my 5 bottles back. And that cured me of Ponzi schemes. And then later on, somebody explained to me the math behind it. And I said, oh, it works 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. It's geometric progression, and that won't work. Hmm. And then I applied that to Social Security, and that's what Social Security is. You see, pay-as-you-go means Ponzi scheme. Pay-as-you-go means Ponzi scheme. Can you say Ponzi, boys and girls? All right. So I say this is an oxymoron over here, but let me give you the numbers, because if you've got letters after your name right now today in the year 2007, you're paying in on about $100,000 worth of salary. So if you've got letters after your name, you should be making 100 grand a year. That puts you in the top 5% of income earners. All you doctors, lawyers, real estate brokers, engineers, you know, you people are the smart people, the intelligentsia of America. And you're making 100 grand a year. Well, you're paying in about $12,000 a year in Social Security taxes. So let me use my Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instrument calculator and do the arithmetic for you. Okay, so we don't want to strain your brain here. $12,000. Now plug in $12,000. Now you graduated from college when you were about 22 years old. Now, when you first took that first job, you know, with Lockheed, they weren't paying you 100 grand a year, remember? Okay. But as you worked your way up the corporate ladder, they started paying you more and more money. So over the course of 40 years on average, we're gonna give you the $100,000. You're gonna pay them the maximum amount, $12,000. And we're gonna go times 40 years. Now that's $480,000. I mean, that's the reality of it. The reality is you are paying this amount of money to Social Security whether you like it or not. You're just working for Lockheed or Boeing or, you know, General Electric or whatever. Now, as a result of that, how much are you going to get back? Well, with your COLA, your cost of living adjusted escalator, and in today's legal language of Social Security, you're going to get back approximately $1,000 a month or $12,000 a year. So how long are you going to live? Well, you're going to retire at age 62 and get, but you know, later on, you're going to, you know, you people in the year 2030, 40, 50, you're not going to retire at 62. You're going to be retiring at 67, 69, 72, and so on. And that's because you're living longer. And so it changes. It's kind of in a state of flux, but you know, you can build a model and then you can extrapolate into the future what has happened over the last 40 years. So we use the model from 1960 to 2000. 40 years. And then we use that model and extrapolate it from 2000 to 2040 to come up with, well, if what happened in the past happens in the future, then that's probably about what you could expect. And so when we extrapolated this model forward, we found out that Social Security goes bankrupt in 2032 with $4 trillion worth of liabilities. That's bad news. That means that after 2032, you ain't going to get any money. It gets worse than that, though, because while in 2012, Social Security is going to hit the break-even point. That is, the amount of money going in and going out is going to balance in 2012. They can continue on printing money, but you keep losing purchasing power. So let me give you a little lesson here in geometric progression. It's called the rule of 72. So if you're not too smart like me, then you can't do real advanced math like I can. Then you have to follow some guidelines. And here's the rule of 72 guideline. And here's the way it works. Let's suppose in 1960, you had $10,000 and you put it in the bank at 5% interest. Using the rule of 72, you put in 72 into your calculator divided by 5, that's 5% interest, and you get the number 14.4. That means that your $10,000 in 14.4 years doubled to $20,000. Your $20,000 in 14.4 years at 5% interest compounded annually and just left in the bank will double again in 28.8 years to $40,000. If you leave that money in the bank until it doubles again, and you know it just keeps doubling and doubling and doubling for 40 years, you'll end up with $70,000 in round numbers. So your $10,000 doubles to $70,000. It's called the miracle of compounding. Okay, well, it works the other way too. You could take the same $10,000 in 1960 and stick it under the mattress. It's not collecting any interest. Then you take a look at the inflation rate from 1960 to 2000, and it's 4.7%. So we take the same $10,000 at 14.4 years, and it's 4.7, and then we extrapolate that out to the year 2000, and your purchasing power is $1,300. So you lost, you know, in round numbers, you know, you lost about $8,500 worth of your purchasing power. That's why you needed to have your money invested at 5% so that you could break even, because it now takes $70,000 to buy what $10,000 would back in 1960. That's the problem you're going to have with Social Security 40 years from now. Now, if you gave this money, this $500,000, all you college people out there, if you took this same $500,000 at 5% interest over the next 40 years, you'd have a pretty tidy sum in the bank. In fact, you'd have about $3 million. And that $3 million, assuming it was paying you 5% interest, would be paying you, you know, let's just do this for a minute. Here's $3 million. And let's go with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times 0.05 would pay you $150,000 a year divided by 12 would pay you $12,500 a month interest on your $500,000 or your $3 million in the bank. And it would never depreciate, and you would leave the balance to your children as an inheritance. But when you pay it into Social Security, they don't invest it. It's a pay-as-you-go program, remember? And therefore, they just pay you back out of what you paid in. Actually, they're paying out what you paid into somebody else, and they're going to pay you what they hope to collect from somebody else. But now we've got declining birth rates to add into this equation. So not only do you have an accelerating percentage being taken, and an accelerating amount of money that's being taxed, and a depreciating number of people paying in, because you have a declining birth rate, but you also have to include inflation into the equation. All right, so what that means is, when you get out to the end of your 40 years of service and your $500,000 that you paid into Social Security, they will pay you back $150,000, which means you have to pay $350,000 to have the government write you 120 checks. Let's do the arithmetic on that one. Let's take $350,000 and divide that by 120 checks. You're going to have to pay the government $2,916 per check to have them give you $1,000 a month for 10 years. Honest to God, you people with degrees after your names and you know, you're real smart people, do you need to pay somebody $3,000 a month to write you a check for $1,000? Mull that one over, boys and girls, while we take a break, and I remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights. And we teach biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, let me get back to Social Security. It is the third rail of politics. Back in 1978, after having done the arithmetic on this, it came to my attention that I would be paying in around $150,000 or so dollars. As it turns out, past tense, I can report to you that from 1950 to 78, I paid in about $12,000. And I kissed that goodbye so that I wouldn't have to pay in. I dropped out of Social Security. I rescinded Social Security so that I wouldn't have to pay the income tax. I didn't want to pay tax anymore. I didn't want to pay Social Security because Social Security takes about 16%. Income tax takes 17% minimum. 17 to 16 is 33. That's one-third of your creativity, one-third of everything you create and produce. And I thought, my God, what am I going to get for my one-third? And I found out, well, for my one-third, I'm going to have to pay to have these checks written to me. And I said, oh, I think I could do that. And, you know, I'm a big boy. It is true. I don't have a college degree, but I thought, shucks, you know, I'm a pretty big kid. You know, I think I could probably, save my own money. So I dropped out of Social Security. Now, had I maintained my Social Security account all of those years, I would have been paying in the maximum amount until 2002. I would have been paying my 15.3%, you know, toward the end in the year 2000. And in the intervening years, I'd have been paying in the maximum. So I added all that up. And by the way, you can get this from the Social Security website. Now, I am computer illiterate, and I have to confess that I couldn't turn the damn computer on. But my boy Dirk can, and he's a National Merit Scholar. He's real smart, real smart. He can count. I'm telling you, that kid, he don't even need his fingers. That kid's so smart, he not only can keep his shoes on, he can keep both hands in his pockets and count. That's how smart that boy is. Well, anyway, I had my boy. I said, now, son, would you get on the computer and see what you can get out of Social Security? So he did, and he pushes all the buttons, and here comes the Social Security webpage. And for those of you that have college degrees, I'm sure that you people can all use computers. You truck drivers out there, carpenters, plumbers, and electricians now, so I may have a problem with this. Remember, your excuse is, I didn't get a college degree. Now, for all you people that have degrees now, I said that Social Security is an oxymoron. So, follow along. When I dropped out in 1978, I would have paid in $153,000 total. I saved $141,000, and I invested my $141,000 in something else. You know, I spent a little on Flo's girls, and I spent a little on Muscadoodle and Jack Daniels, burned up some airplane gas, and had a good time. But I didn't waste any money. I never wasted a dime. And I got full value out of every dime that I spent. But I question whether or not you're getting full value out of your Social Security payments into the Social Security program. And so, for all of you out there, let me give you the bad news. It's called Social Security by the numbers. And I teach this in my tax and status school. It's lesson 13. It's called Social Security by the numbers. And just follow along and sit back, light up a cigar, and listen to this. If you earn the minimum wage, which is currently $5 and some change, work 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, for 45 years, with the current Social Security tax rate of 16%, you're going to pay in $1,770 a year in payroll withholding taxes to Social Security. Now, if you had taken the same amount of money and invested that in U.S. savings bonds, which pay a rate of 5% compounded annually on the average, starting in the year 2000 and continuing through the year 2045, you would have a principal balance of $282,726.71. In round numbers, $250,000. That $250,000 would yield to you $14,136.34 a year forever. That's $1,178 a month. That's about $1,200 a month. And when you died, you'd still have $282,726.71 to pass on to your children. Now, please note that for the purposes of simplicity, I'm leaving out inflation as a factor since the COLA, that's the cost of living adjustments, are designed to keep inflation's effects to a minimum. So if inflation is 3%, your check goes up 3%. And since the rate on bonds and bank accounts is generally higher than inflation, these totals should also go up. Thus, by leaving inflation out of the picture in the equation, we get an equally clear picture of the relative financial states without the need to do a lot of unnecessary math. I might point out to you that while inflation today is running 10% a year, the official inflation rate is 4.7% a year, and your cost of living COLA increase was 3.6%. Your government doesn't even pay you what they admit the inflation rate is. Boys and girls, can you spell or can you say screwed, blued, and tattooed? Okay, if you can say screwed, blued, and tattooed, then you got that lesson correct. Now, Social Security is going to take $1,770 of your money for 45 years. And that totals $79,666, so let's round it off to $80,000. Okay, kids? $80,000. So you're going to pay in a total of $80,000. Now, when you stop flipping burgers down at McDonald's, when you stop paying in and you start drawing out at age 65, you're going to get $500 a month. And then you're going to die at age 75. That's what the statistics tell us. So you're going to be drawing out $60,000. Now, remember, you paid in $80,000. You drew out $60,000. So you're going to pay Social Security $20,000 to manage your money for you. Now, if you're not too bright and you're working for minimum wage all your life, you know, you're mentally retarded, I wouldn't doubt for a minute, but what you probably need is some smart guy in Washington, D.C. to manage your money for you. Makes all the sense in the world to me. I'm having a hard time understanding why you doctors, dentists, lawyers, and all of you professionals who are making $100,000 a year need Social Security to manage your $500,000. I could see this guy down here at McDonald's needing some help. I'm having a hard time understanding why all of you smart people need this kind of help. Now, this guy comes out better than you lawyers and doctors. You see, he's going to get back 75% of what he paid in. He's going to pay in 80 and he's going to get back 60. You real smart people out there are going to pay in 500 and get back 150. And we're talking about some pretty big bucks. So if you smart people out there, if you invested your money just in a crummy annuity at 1%, you'd at least get your $500,000 back. You people are putting $500,000 into Social Security, and you're going to lose $350,000. You know, as dumb as I am, even a high school dropout can figure that losing $350,000 ain't small change. Shucks, I figured I could put that money in a damn cigar box and come out that good, which is, by the way, just exactly correct. So you could take your same $500,000, stick it in a cigar box, use the rule of 72, and come out just about the same. You know, assuming inflation's 4.7% over 40 years. Now, that's the low end. That's the $5 guy. You know, that's the minimum wage earner. Now, presidential hopeful George W. Bush, he wants to lower income workers and give you a 2% rebate on your Social Security taxes. And he's got this program, you know, with private accounts. So I took those numbers from the private accounts. Remember in 2004, George Bush, he said, hey, I got this plan over here. So I didn't have contact with Big Al. And I'm just as dumb as I was back in 68. So I haven't gotten any smarter. From 68 until 2007, I'm still just about as dumb as I've always been. So I had to go to my boy Dirk. Now, remember my boy Dirk. You know, he's the National Merit Scholar. You know, the kid that can count with both hands in his pocket. And I said, hey, Dirk, come on over here. Help me with my arithmetic here. President Bush says that he's going to give us these private accounts. And he's going to let us keep 2% and invest that in the stock market or something. So my boy Dirk and I, we went to work on the stock market from 1960 to the year 2000. I mean, President Bush is a nice guy and I love him like a brother. But you know, he ain't much smarter than I am. In fact, I was smart enough to go get my boy Dirk to do the arithmetic. I ain't sure that Mr. Bush went to anybody to have him or to help him do the arithmetic. But here's what we found out. We found out that if the low-income worker over here could invest 2% in the stock market, well, we took a look at the stock market, and the stock market, if you invested in it in the year 1960 to 2000 and then factored in inflation at 4.7% and you put $10,000 in 1960, you'd do a little bit better than if you stuck it under the mattress. You would lose $3,800 worth of purchasing power, but you'd still have $6,200 left. Now, that was with George Bush's arithmetic, so I extrapolated that out into the future, and I said, hell, I'm not much better off if I just stuck the money under a mattress. Well, I'm a little better off. I don't deny that, but, you know, not much. So I said, I don't think that George Bush has done his arithmetic very well either. Now, I'm presuming that Mr. Bush has got cabinet members and secretaries of state and secretaries of the Treasury and Wall Street and all these real smart guys out there, and they ought to be smarter than I am. High school dropout, no. I kind of figured that let's go on to the next step. Now, I'm a plumber by trade. So I call you guys out there with blue collars. Always remember, now, old George, he's a plumber. Now, us plumbers out here, we make pretty good money. I remember a doctor, you know, he called a plumber out one time to fix his pipes. And the plumber gave him a bill for $600. And the doctor said, you know, I'm a brain surgeon, and I don't make $600 an hour. You've been here an hour, and you're billing me $600. And he said, I'm a brain surgeon, and I don't make $600. And the plumber said, you know, I didn't make $600 an hour either when I was a brain surgeon. So, you know, even the professionals have to take their hats off to us plumbers over here, you know. So if you're a plumber, you're making about $22 and I've forgotten exactly, $22 or $23.16 an hour. So if we take your average pay and then we take your Social Security tax out of it and we extrapolate that out for 40 or 45 years, you know, and here's kind of the way that works out. Let me get my paper back here again. If you're a middle-income worker, this is where your average blue-collar worker fits in, you're going to earn about $35,000 a year. It's up a little bit higher than that now. Using the above formulas, you'll be paying about $5,600 a year in payroll taxes. Remember, the 16% is half you and half from your employer, who won't be paying you as much as he would otherwise to make up for all the money that he has to send in your name to the feds. So take a look at the amount of self-employed person has to pay, and you'll see that it's double what a non-self-employed person supposedly pays. And then realize that that's how much you're paying, too, because your employer ain't paying a dime to Social Security for you. You're paying it all because you're the guy that does the work. Okay. Now, invested in U.S. savings bonds at 5%, this means that over 45 years, you'll end up with a principal balance of $894,000. That's about $900,000, which would yield $44,716 a year, or $3,700 a month forever, and you'd still have the same $900,000 to leave your kids, plumbers, carpenters, electricians. No, making $35,000 a year. Now, Social Security is going to take the same $5,600 a year from you over the same 45 years. This comes to $252,000. Now, that's $250,000. So, you know, if you're just out here, you know, working on the assembly line, doing your thing over here, you're going to pay Social Security $250,000. I mean, out of your check every week. Add that up, 52 weeks a year, all going to Social Security. Can you say screwed, blued, and tattooed, boys and girls? All right. So when you retire at age 65, you'll be eligible for payments of about $804 a month, which totals $96,480 a year. So let's round it off to $100,000. All right, you're going to pay in $250,000, and you're going to get back $100,000. If you live to be 75 years old, you paid in $250,000, you got back $100,000. That means the government's going to pay you back about 38 or 40 cents on the dollar. So as I said before, the more you make, the worse the Social Security looks. But you know, as bad as that is, it's still better than the doctors, the dentists, and the lawyers. Those are guys that are making $38 an hour. They're paying in a half a million, and they're going to get back 20 cents on the dollar. All right, so you smart guys with college diplomas, you pay in your Social Security, you get back 20 cents on the dollar. Us dumb guys that are out here fixing your pipes, we get back 40 cents on the dollar. And the real dummy, the guy that's mentally retarded, is flipping burgers over at Burger King, he's getting back 80 cents on the dollar. I mean, all of us are getting screwed, but I'm just saying that some of us get screwed a little bit more than others. Okay, so now you can see how that game is being played, can't you? Now that's why I call this oxymoron. Oxymoron. Social Security is the third rail of politics. That's like saying, I'm out shopping for a mortgage. I'm out shopping for a master. I want to be a bond servant. And surely, kids, we can do better than that, can't we? All right, just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, let me tell you a little bit of the story over here, because I got about 10 minutes here. Now, Social Security account number is a license to work for a corporation. The state may require private individuals to obtain a state-created franchise, such as a license to work for it or for any of its corporate creations. And a corporation, which is a creature of the state, can be compelled to require a prospective employee to possess a Social Security account number, which is evidence of a state-created franchise, prior to hiring that applicant. And that's because an individual has no common law right to work for a corporation. Corporations are a creature of the civil law, not the common law, and the common law does not recognize corporations created under the civil law. Corporations are juristic, state-created persons, and under corporate law, the creator of the corporation, the state, can demand anything it desires from its creation, such as regulation by statute and taxation, or may even destroy it by use of taxation, says our Supreme Court in Enoch versus Williams, cited at 370 U.S. page 1. And just as a state employee must obtain a Social Security number and pay an income tax on the privilege of working for the state, the individual free man who is otherwise unenfranchised must admit to enfranchisement to work for the state or one of its corporations. Thus, those applying for and receiving a Social Security number have applied for and received a privilege from government for which an excise tax may be levied, and proof of participation is the Social Security account number. Therefore, the Social Security number is a quasi-license contract to work for all of those who want to work for the state or one of its corporations, and it has the effect of extending the state franchise to the employee. Boys and girls, do you know that your Social Security number is your taxpayer identification number? Did you know that an excise tax is a privilege tax? That's what a franchise is. Now, did you know that the income tax is a franchise tax, and that income and Social Security taxes go together like a hand in a glove? Why, you couldn't pay your income tax without your Social Security number. Participation in the Social Security welfare system, as well as the privilege to receive entitlements such as unemployment insurance, welfare, food stamps, and aid to dependent children, and so on, are congressionally granted benefits or privileges accruing to participants. And any privilege granted by government is a proper subject of taxation. The benefits are, in effect, subsidies of certain privileges such as minimum wage, unemployment and compensation insurance, and there are 108 benefits provided under the Social Security program. The costs of and these benefits can be levied upon such privileges as an indirect excise tax, also known as the income tax. So government can compel you to voluntarily obtain a Social Security number as a federal license to work for a corporation, voluntarily accept and use Federal Reserve notes in payment of the consideration or just compensation of the debt arising among and between the employee, the corporation, and the federal government. And three, pay the federal tax debt arising from the franchise and Federal Reserve notes. And four, provide information. And five, file a return. And six, file an IRS W-4 form upon employment, which is a contract of franchise and expectation and promise of payment of the tax due at year's end. So the reason, then, that the Social Security account number operates as a franchise tax is that the payments are matched by the employer, which is a state-created corporation, resulting in reduced net tax revenue by way of deductions. And two, the payments from the employee and the corporation go into the general fund and not into any special protective fiduciary trust fund. And three, the expectations of the employee are addressed to receiving benefits from the general fund, which is a franchise in itself. Because when we retire on Social Security, we are paid out of the general tax revenues. Social Security is not insurance. Social Security is a welfare scheme. So says the Supreme Court of the United States in Fleming versus Nestor, cited at 363 U.S. 603. And the Social Security account number operates as a taxable franchise. And there are no property rights in Social Security. And where there are benefits or entitlements without property, there has to be a franchise. And in every known court case regarding state compulsory insurance benefit programs dealing with withholding, such as unemployment compensation, accident disability insurance, corporations are involved. And the cases in effect hold that a corporation can be compelled to withhold and otherwise participate in such programs. The application and receipt of a Social Security account number by a person or individual is the admission of jurisdiction of the IRS over the property, the interests, and the endeavors of that person or individual. The IRS 1040 form is a negotiable instrument in the form of a revivable installment note, and installments are due annually on any state-created franchise, and the payment upon which is directly proportional to the extent to which the franchise is exercised, as measured by net income. A fellow by the name of Aaron Russo put out a movie not too long ago, and he called it Where is the Law? And he asked the commissioner of the IRS, he asked judges, he asked people in government, he said, where's the law that requires us to pay the income tax? And none of these people, apparently, could identify where the law was located. I can. Got your pencil sharpened on both ends? Here it is. The law is recorded in Title 26, Section 7203, Section 7343, and in Title 42, Section 301, through 335. That's where the law is recorded that requires you to pay an income tax. Social Security is an oxymoron. Social Security, the third rail of politics, is an oxymoron. And the income tax and Social Security take one-third of everything that you create and produce. If that's not an oxymoron, let me know what is. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And remember, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling The Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.